I was in a meeting earlier this week. It was a long conversation about hard topics, race and power and democracy and anger and forgiveness and community. We talked and listened for understanding, came away with next steps and a plan to keep working. It was good stuff. It was good. During this conversation, almost as an aside, we were talking about what a particular word meant, and someone said, "I love word origins." And they shared where that word had come from and what it meant, and I thought, "I love word origins too." I love learning new words and where they come from and what they mean and how they help us understand our world at a deeper level. And I thought, I'm not the only one. Goody. So I'm going to share a word with you, a big theological word. Here it is, eschatology. How many of you have ever heard this word before? Be honest. Look at you. The choir, I see a lot of hands up. They're paying a lot of attention. But many of you are going to learn something new today, so that's great. Eschatology is theology about the end, about the last things, about the end of history, the end of an era, the beginning of the next one. It comes from the Greek for last words. Eschaton is the end, logos is words. So as theology is words about God, eschatology is words about the end. Not the end of everything, mind you, usually, but the end of the present era, the beginning of a new era, a new heaven and a new earth, as the book of Revelation puts it. Now, you may wonder, why is a Unitarian Universalist minister talking about eschatology at all? We don't believe in the second coming of Jesus, do we? We don't believe in a God who's going to come and change everything all at once, do we? The rapture that some people will disappear all at once. We don't believe in that, do we? It's not like we're all going to gather on a hilltop and count down to the end of the world as groups of religious people did repeatedly in the 19th century and even to this day. We're not going to do that, are we? Well, no. No. These are not likely things for us to believe or do. And yet, if we want to talk about hope, about when hope and history rhyme, about where we feel hope in this world right now, and where we feel hope in our own lives, then we should think a little about eschatology. For there is absolutely a liberal eschatology, a theory of how everything will change and a new era will begin. And many of us, even subconsciously, believe something along these lines. Maybe even subconsciously, you might think that there will be a liberal Messiah, a hero or a heroine, someone who will come and by the force of their personality or the wisdom of their heart or the intelligence of their mind will issue in a new era, who will close the book on the old and begin a new day. Right. Well, now I'm gonna question that assumption, so don't get too excited. Do you remember? Hope, right? Remember what it felt like? The vessel of our hopes, the promised one. Oh, secularly promise, of course. But still, to place your hope in a hero, one who can manipulate the system for good, is ingrained in human consciousness. It's archetypal. It's deep within us to find a ruler or a chief or one close to the sun who we can project our hope onto. Of course, it doesn't work. Systems are sticky and hard to change. Patterns of oppression and domination fight back. Leaders aren't perfect. They make compromises. Sometimes we're shocked or disappointed. Or the tribe chooses someone new to be their chief, someone who can destroy as much of the new era as they can. And for a moment, perhaps, we think there's no Savior, no Messiah, no hope. There's us. And we might do the work to bring about a new era, we think. But the temptation is always there. And maybe we think next time we just need a better hero. Not someone who will fix the system, but someone who will break the wheel. We who will destroy what was to make space for what might be. A hero who won't compromise as much. That's what we need next time. Well, yeah. Now, I'm going to question that assumption, too. There's a temptation of all human beings to think that our hope lies in a hero who will repair or restore or recreate a new heaven and a new earth. It's a hop, skip, and a jump from this kind of hero expectation to full-on eschatological thinking, that something will happen that will change everything. Puppies and rainbows for everyone, once the indictments come down. Or once we have self-driving cars, or once we have fission power, or once we all wake up to the truth of pesticides or essential oils, or once we get money out of politics, or once we all watch this movie together and we all change our minds, or. Yeah, I'm sorry. I have moments that I think this is true, too, but it just isn't. I mean, each invention, each insight might make small shifts in the way the world works, but a new era? I doubt it. I'm often tempted, I'm sure we all are, but I'm trying hard not to place my hope in a hero who will ride in to fix it all. Even when liberals turn away from hero hope, from a kind of secular messianic eschatology, those are big words, we're still tempted into eschatological thinking, to thinking that we will create a new era, an era of peace and compassion and justice, not because of a hero, and not even all at once, we admit it, but slowly, we say, slowly but inevitably, through progress onward and upward forever, a new world will be born. The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. That's what Theodore Parker, the Unitarian abolitionist, preached 180 years ago, and what Martin Luther King Jr. repeated and preached often and often, that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And then we can make that new world. And at our best, we know better than to say that the arc bends by itself. Gosh, no. We must bend it, we say. That's our job to make hope and history rhyme. God's hands are our hands. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We will usher in the new era, slowly but steadily, peacefully, through the growing light and gentle power of persuasion. Would it be so? But I have my doubts. I mean, every once in a while, yes, every once in a while it breaks through. Winning the fight for marriage equality was like this. The Montreal Protocols, which saved the ozone layer. Remember that? Remember the ozone layer? We saved them. Sometimes we win. It was like this. The Berlin Wall coming down felt like this. And there are others, moments when we feel hope, when we could, through grassroots, determined effort, make the world more decent and more just. It does happen. But there are no guarantees. And sometimes we try so hard and it doesn't seem to go anywhere. We get a win, and then it gets taken away. Slavery finally ends, but then Jim Crow takes its place. Jim Crow ends, and mass incarceration takes its place. Unions give workplace protections and a minimum wage, and then get chipped away. And economic inequality is as high as it was in 1929. There are plenty of these examples, too. And even when we do win, it's not like that solves every problem. We celebrate for a moment, and then we have to get back to work on the next thing. There's no new era, no eschaton of utopia. The fantasies of the imagination don't come to pass. So is hope a drug? The false narrative that dulls us into compliance? Is eschatological thinking a fool's errand? And if it is, should we give up on hope? Should we forget it? Stop talking about hope and just talk about resilience? Forget about changing the world and just try to reduce the harm? Is this cynicism? Or a necessary corrective to too much optimism? The poet Adrienne Rich, in her poem Natural Resources, wrote that there were words she cannot choose again: humanism, androgyny. Such words, she wrote, have no shame in them, no diffidence before the raging stoic grandmothers. That's a great line. She meant by this a kind of naive humanism, a naive liberalism of the 20th century and of ours, a too easy eschatological fantasy that we just need to think rationally and everything will be fixed. And this is the danger of our faith tradition, that our vision of hope upward and onward forever is too easy, that our story of the birth of a new world has no labor pains in it. I think her point is well taken, very well taken. I reject eschatological thinking. I do not believe in the end times. I do not think the world will change all at once. I do not believe in a new era or a new earth. And I do not believe that everyone will wake up and the struggle will end. I am skeptical of conversions. When someone tells me they've changed, I wait to see how true that is. I don't think there are magic fixes or shortcuts. But I wish you more will than hill, more joy than sorrow, more stories than stars. I don't believe in magical transformations, but I've seen baking powder work, and not just in baking either, but in the soul. Something rises up. I don't believe in a new heaven and a new earth, but I do believe that every night a child is born is a holy night. I don't believe in the eschaton, but I have seen people sit around a table and talk about hard things and move toward deeper understanding and talk about what words mean and make plans for the next step, not to solve it, but to do a little better next time. I don't believe that everything will ever be easy, but I have seen people love each other with compassion and mercy when things are really hard. I don't believe that some God has a plan to remake the world, but I have been stirred by something sacred to get up and do what needs to be done one more time. I don't believe that the storm will go away and never come again, but I have felt that still small voice in the storm. And I have heard the songbird who keeps singing in the gale and never asks a thing, but invites us to sing. I don't think this season of Advent, of expectation, celebrates the birth of a Messiah who will end what is and make a new world, but when I see a child laugh, I feel hope. And when the candle burns in the dark, I feel hope. And when we remember the persistence of his teaching of love despite the best efforts of empire, I feel hope. I know that there will never be an end to death, but I also know that people can love each other through grief, and that memory can be healing, and that the choices we make matter. I don't believe in the eschaton. Things will never be perfect forever. But sometimes there is a moment when the sunset turns orange and pink and the world is still, when two grandchildren play together, when two lovers are intertwined and breathe together, when a conversation unlocks a new idea, when the notes become alive in the music, when the food is good and the company is better, when one person forgives another, when the songbird sings and the storm is quiet, and that's hope. Sometimes there is a moment when something feels possible. Maybe it'll work and maybe not, but we don't give up. We try, we love, we long, we dream, This is my hope. Not a new world, this one. Not a new hero, but just us and everyone else doing what they can. Not a change to everything, but a little better at something, and then the next thing, and then the next thing. One of my favorite Christmas carols, and we'll sing it over the next few weeks, is "It Came Upon a Midnight Clear." It was written by a Unitarian minister during a war in the 19th century. He wrote of the angel song, he writes, "Beneath the angel song has rolled 2,000 years of wrong, that we humans at war hear not the love song which they bring. How could we celebrate Christmas when there was so much wrong?" he wondered. But then he wrote, "Oh, rest and be still and hear the song which still they give. They have not stopped singing, and we can still hear. We can sing back and try. We can listen, still sing with them. Hope, not because we will win, but because to try is good. To love is good and to dream is good. My heart is moved by all I cannot save." That's how the poet Adrian Rich begins the last verses of that same poem, Natural Resources, the poem about how she doesn't want any naive liberalism, how she will not take simple optimism anymore. She writes, "My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed." It's true, so much, and it is heartbreaking. But the poet is not done writing. "So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who, age after age, perversely, with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world." That's how she finishes. That's my hope. In those who, age after age, reconstitute the world, who listen for the angel's song, still there under the sounds of strife, who listen to the songbird and the still small voice, and who, through love and service and everyday acts, reconstitute the world. This is my hope. This is what I look for coming from within, not from without. This is my longing and my calling. There is no end. There's just beginnings over and over and over again. And that gives me hope. I invite you to rise in body and or in spirit. We're going to sing "People Look East," 226 in your gray hymnal, and the words are up here.
People, raise the eyes there.
I will extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. And I invite you, if you wish, to join hands with one another for our blessings and benedictions. May the truth that makes us free and the hope that never dies and the love that casts out fear lead us forward together till the day breaks and the shadows flee away. We'll sing together our closing blessing. We'll sing it through twice.